All right, it is Friday once again, 5 p.m. Congratulations, you made it through another week. So did I. I'm feeling good about that, that's for sure. So it's a triple happy hour. Friday, the weekend, 5 p.m. end time for American Net Radio on 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD. On Fridays, if you're a regular listener, you know that we call the show How Music Changed on Fridays because we go really deep into specific topics. What we've been doing is a series on Pink Floyd. We're doing something a little bit different for this series in the sense that there's a lot of the albums that we've covered in our Wednesday series, so we're not actually airing them live on our show on Fridays. So if you are wondering what the gaps are, it's simply because we've already recorded them and we are putting them onto the website rather than re-airing them on Friday to be redundant. So if you felt like you've missed something, for example, from our last series, we just put up a show for the album Animals for part 14 that is up on the website. So if you are interested at all in hearing that album and the information that we've been able to conjure for it and the hour that we spent playing it, please go to the website, AmericanHitNetwork.com. And that brings us to part 15, which is where we are today, and we are going to cover what is perhaps their second most famous album, the most successful double album of all time, The Wall, of course. Now, that being said, with all of its success, almost without competition, I think it's fair to say that The Wall is the most self-obsessed, solipsistic, hate-inspired, misanthropic, and disingenuous album ever made. However, it is also one of the most compelling, fascinating, and entertaining. Almost like a horror film, there's evil and mental illness behind The Wall, almost throughout the entire album, a barrier that represents a mechanism not intended to protect the outside world, but the wall is there to protect the chief songwriter himself. Now, as a quote-unquote rock star, Roger Waters became something that any ordinary person could not understand or abide. But he was also self-aware, knowing that he had inadvertently separated himself from society, unable to communicate on a normal level with anybody, even including his own bandmates. So that was the theme for the album. Now, the artistic and financial success of The Wall is undeniable. It represents a monumental peak for Pink Floyd, but it is also the last album that the four remaining band members would create together as a team. Even so, keyboardist Richard Wright on this album was removed from the band for the recording of the album. But he was kept on as a paid employee for the subsequent tour, which was incredibly ironic because the tour itself was so expensive that Wright was the only person to actually earn a profit. The other three guys all went into debt because it was so expensive to pay for the tour for The Wall. A film, though, that a subsequent solo tour by Roger and time itself all added to the allure of the project. And today, The Wall stands as one of the most compelling and successful projects in the history of rock and roll. But if I sound overly judgmental in tone with my introduction, then I apologize, because The Wall truly is a phenomenon. It's really only too bad, though, that others had to experience pain and abuse in order for Roger to express his own. Since this is a show that is basically all about Roger, who was basically, as quote, a rock star traumatized since childhood by the death of his father, who has descended into decadence and depression as a result of his success. And the story opens with this track as the introduction. It's called In the Flesh. Thank you.
that you expected to see. If you wanna find out what's behind these cold eyes, you'll just have to claw your way through this disguise.
Wow. Now, okay, let's put this in context now. It's so noisy that it's hard to hear what's going on, but that's Roger, basically, who is like acting like some totally insane movie director who is saying things like, roll the sound effects, and then he's like saying, action, drop it on them. Like he's literally trying to drop the bomb on you, the listening audience. It's really deranged. And this is all because of his reaction to an incident where he had literally was so turned off by an audience at a show that he was performing at that he brought some of the people who were near the stage to come close enough to him. And when they did, he spit in his face. And Roger, he did say that he immediately felt regret for doing it. But he basically, this is his quote, I was shocked by my behavior. I realized that what had once been a worthwhile and manageable exchange between us, the band, and them, the audience, had been utterly perverted by scale, corporate avarice, and ego. All that remained was an arrangement that was essentially sadomasochistic. So this is Roger trying to get this out of his blood, more or less. That's what the whole theme of this double album is about. And it's why it's so dark, and it's why I say things about how it is solipsistic and self-obsessed and hate-inspired and misanthropic, because it is. It's impossible to get around it. And then he brings his childhood into it because he's also carrying with him like the pain of the fact that his father died in World War II, so he never really knew the man at all. And I'm not going to play the entire album on this show. This is going to be me playing featured tracks. We will repeat this again on Wednesdays. It'll be on our Wednesday series when we finally get up to the year 1979. And that's not going to be too long from now. So I'm going to say that we'll probably within a year be playing The Wall in 2 one-hour segments on a Wednesday. But because this hasn't happened yet, I can now cover this as part of our Pink Floyd series. So let's pick up with the bit that leads off to the opening single, and then the single, which basically expresses what caused the paranoia and why he needs separation from his audience. First track is called The Happiest Days of Our Lives, and then, of course, Just Another Brick in the Wall.
Yeah!
right, as we move on through this, of course, you know the single there, Another Brick in the Wall. This is obviously a Roger Waters project. Most of the band even felt ostracized from it. There are two factors, though, that you should recognize beyond Roger Waters. The first, of course, is the extraordinary guitar work of David Gilmour on this album. Perhaps some of the best guitar work ever on any rock and roll album. It's just so well thought out and constructed. It's amazing. And the second is the producer, Bob Ezrin. I've spoken about Bob Ezrin a lot in our series with American Hit Network and American Hit Radio on Wednesdays and Fridays. And here's a great example of why. Because he's credited as co-producer with Roger Waters. And it was Ezrin who basically helped to refine the concept of what was happening and also to bridge the tensions of what was going on, because Roger Waters was almost impossible to deal with. And the rest of the musicians didn't even really know if they had any say with what was going on. So it was Ezrin who eventually presented a 40-page script to the rest of the band so they could understand a storyline that Roger was going for, because he didn't bother to tell them. So the next day in the studio, with Ezrin's 40-page script, they read it like a play with the band, and all of their eyes began to twinkle because they could, for the first time, actually see the album and understand the theme. Ezrin also changed the storyline a little bit, making it a little bit less about Roger Waters as an autobiography and turning it into a story about a composite character named Pink. This was Ezrin who was coming up with these ideas. And the engineer, Nick Griffiths, was saying Ezrin was very good because he managed to pull the whole thing together. He was a forceful guy. There was a lot of argument between the band about how it should sound, but it was Ezrin who bridged the gap. That being said, when the time came for them to decide whether or not Ezrin would get credit for the album, Waters made it clear who was in charge, and he told Bob Ezrin, quote, "You can write anything you want, just don't expect any credit." So Rogers was not going to let go of anything at all. He's also ended up firing the keyboardist, Richard Wright, in the middle of the whole sequence, saying, "You're not doing anything. We don't need you. We'll call you if we need you for something. We'll hire you as a musician, but you're not in the band for this record." Amazing. Let's get to one of the songs that I think has a lot to do with Ezrin's input as a producer. Here's the song Mother.
Mother, do you think they'll drop the bomb? Mother, do you think they'll like this song? Mother, do you think they'll try to break my balls? Time. mama's gonna put all of her fears into you. Mama's gonna keep you right here under her wing. She won't let you fly, but she might let you sing. Mama's gonna keep baby cozy and warm.
This is just the highlights of the story, by the way. I mean, it's incredible in its entirety. But maybe in a way, by me like compiling it like this, it's going to be even more intense. Because right now, Pink is a character, but the basis of the story does come from segments of Roger's autobiography. So you've got to keep that in mind. Like this next track that we're going to play is actually one of three songs on the album that were co-written by David Gilmour. David Gilmour gets co-writing credit, and I think that has a lot to do with the way that he had done the most, some of the most phenomenal guitar work you could possibly imagine for the project. But it's in the story at this point, Pink, Roger, if they're the same person, are on tour, apparently in the United States. And he's out for casual sex with a groupie, but he calls home and he discovers that his wife had been cheating on him. And he freaks out and he has essentially a breakdown, and he even thinks about like figuring out how he could maybe kill his wife. In other words, it's fine for him to be having, you know, doing what he's doing on the road, but his wife could not be having an affair at home. How could that be? How much of this is reality? Well, that's for Roger to say, not me. The name of this track is called Young Lust.
I'm just a newborn stranger in this town.
John Mitchell Floyd for you accepting charge from the United States. Now he's hung up at your residence. I wonder why he hung up. Is there supposed to be someone out there besides your wife there to answer? Hello? This is United States calling. Are we reaching...
It was a man answering. I believe it was Nick Mason. They were dialing the drummer and recording it. And he figured it was just some sort of a prank. So he just kept hanging up. It ended up on the album. Now, what happens in the storyline here is, of course, the Pink has a total breakdown with the groupie there in the room. She escapes probably feeling as though she just like barely got out with her life because it was so dangerous. And then Pink is left on his own, and he falls into an incredible depression and maybe even commits suicide or considers committing suicide, I should say, at this point in time. And he has to reflect on it, which means to say I need to reflect on it and remind myself what I've got to do here right now and tell you that you are listening to 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD in Garden City, New York. We are playing our way through the highlights of The Wall, which is part 15 in our series dedicated to Pink Floyd. And now we have Pink, Nee Roger, basically reflecting on the insanity of what had just gone down, I think, with the groupie, and maybe how he has to reflect on it a little bit. It's called Hey You.
Getting lonely, getting old, can you feel me? Hey you, standing in the aisles with itchy feet and fainting smiles, can you feel me? Hey you, don't help them to bury the light. Don't give in without a fight. Hey you, out there on your own, sitting naked by the phone, would you touch me? Hey you, with your ear against the wall, waiting for someone to call out, would you touch me? Me to carry the stone. Open your heart, I'm coming home.
Hey You, which I think now brings us to the highlight of the album, and one of the most contentious songs, though, at the same time. The song Comfortably Numb, Roger came up with the lyrics or the idea for the song because when he was on that tour, when he lost his patience with the audience and he spat in the face of one of the audience members, he was actually also suffering from hepatitis and he had been taking muscle relaxants to calm him down. And it gave him the idea of saying that he could maybe write a song about that when Pink, who had just basically had a breakdown in the room in the story, would be have need for somebody to come in and give him some sort of a drug to have him come back to life, so to speak, because he had almost committed suicide in the story. And therefore, he would be able to go and play in the show that he was supposed to play in that night. The thing is, there were a lot of different ideas about how to do the song. And the original idea for the music came from a song that Roger Gilmore put on his first solo album. It was sort of based on it. If you listen to it, you can, I think we played that song a couple weeks ago, where you can say, yeah, that's, it's got that similar feel to it. But Roger took it and basically tried to make it into his own thing, and they would fight about it, like intensely fight about it. And it was the basic plan was like David Gilmour wanted to keep it like a rock song, but Bob Ezrin was also saying, you know what, if we orchestrate this, it would be really, really beautiful. And it ended up that they both won. It was sort of a compromise. It's worth noting that exactly what Bob Ezrin did. Bob Ezrin had worked on Lou Reed's album Berlin a few years earlier, and he had a string part that he had written for Lou Reed that was on the last song of the album, a song called, I forget the name of the song, Sad Song, excuse me. And in the middle of Sad Song, you would have this arpeggiated string section. And it occurred to him that I could use this. And he dropped it into the middle of Comfortably Numb. And it was the exact same part as what is on the Lou Reed album. And it fit perfectly. If you listen to the songs back to back, you'll hear that exact same string section on both songs, supporting both songs in a beautiful manner. Now, on top of that, David Gilmour decided that he needed to write the best guitar solo in the world ever. and he did. It's just it's astounding. I don't think you could find a more well-structured guitar solo. Here's Comfortably Numb.
Is there anyone home? Come on, come on, down. I hear you're feeling down.
probably the highlight of the album. One of the most, I find that to be one of the most incredibly well-recorded rock and roll songs of all time. And it's an amazing piece of work. The whole album is. I mean, the album is stunning. It's just that it's really, really heavy and dark. And I don't think that a lot of people necessarily take it that way. After that song was recorded, David Gilmour said, "I think things like Comfortably Numb were the last embers of mine and Roger's ability to work collaboratively together." I mean, this was essentially the end of Pink Floyd. Roger was just decided to take the whole thing with him. So he left because he thought that he was going to be Pink Floyd. And there were legal battles in that regard about who was going to end up being the band, Roger or the other three members. And it went on for quite a while. And it took time for Pink Floyd, the three members, to be able to retain their name and Roger to become a solo artist. But still, he had the rights to The Wall, which is why he ended up touring it and why the whole concept has lasted for decades, or one of the reasons. But he was impossible. He would make up buttons that he passed around while the album was being made, and it said on it, "Nope," N-O-P-E. And everybody's like, "What is that?" And then he explained it as saying, "It means no points, Ezrin." In other words, Ezrin gets no points for all of the work he's doing, no matter what. Just to mock him, just to make sure that he knew that he was essentially nobody in Roger's eyes. Just stunning stuff like that. But back to the story now. Comfortably Numb, he goes from being comfortably numb to now being able to go onto the stage and do the show, which is the next track, The Show Must Go On, at which point he now becomes hallucinatory, outrageously hallucinatory, in his live performance. Now, this is Roger probably going back to thinking of what he did when he spat on the audience. And now he's basically sees himself as a fascist dictator that is actually chasing down the fans that he considers unworthy of his talents and literally running them over and frightening them to death and making them like run from the stage. So we're going to let it end with that by playing The Show Must Go On in the flesh, which is the Nazi part of it almost, and then Run Like Hell as the audience is basically terrified by what they're seeing. And that's The Wall. Thanks for listening, folks. We will be back next week with some solo projects from the band members. See you then.
We'll be right back.
show. To feel the warm thrill of confusion and space cadet glow. I got some bad news for you, sunshine. It isn't well, he stayed back in the hotel and they sent us along as a surrogate man. Tonight, get him up against the wall. Now there's one in the spotlight. He don't look right to me. Get him up against the wall. And that one looks Jewish. And that one's a cool. Who the hell is my friend? Into the room.
Mm-hmm.